Welcome to the Open Hearted Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Open Hearted Podcast. I'm your host, Will Wheeler, joined with my main man, Photon John. Kev, what's going on, brother?
Hey, cruisy afternoon here in New Farm. Done house sitting for the month tomorrow. So
Nice. So just for all the listeners, we will have a cat in the background.
Potentially,
yeah. Last week of cat sitting. I was about to say babysitting.
Yeah.
But cat sitting. No, but what's been going on, man?
Mostly just chasing after the cat. She's bolted twice now. I've had to run out in the street and find her.
Crazy. Fun times. I'll tell you what, I'm really looking forward to the end of the year. It's, what is it, October now. Mm-hmm. You know when, like, you're getting towards the end of the year and it's like, man, I really need a holiday? You know what? That's got to sort of blend in well to what we're talking about today in regards to holidays and travel and all that. But let's get our guest up on the stage today. Today we're going to be joined by, or with, I should say, Agnes Abelson. Agnes, what's going on?
Hello. Yeah, excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me, guys.
Not a problem. All the way from sunny Manly. I was about to say Melbourne. I don't know why I was going to say that. But, Talking about travel, all that, you know, I think when we first were talking about getting you on, Photon John reached out to me and, you know, he's like, oh, there's this person who does this stuff on, like, doing tour or travel, organizing travel for autistic people. And I'm like, I think I might even know that. Well, not know, but, like, know of that person type of thing. And we're like, man, we've got to get this person on. So thank you so much for joining us today. We're excited to hear a little bit about what you're doing, all the great work you're doing. But I think more than anything, can you please let our viewers or listeners know a little bit about who you are?
Yeah, for sure. Well, first off, I mean, I've seen you, Will, on both here and there on LinkedIn and everything, so it's cool to finally connect.
Likewise.
A bit about myself. I'm just landed here somehow. I'm originally from an island in the north of Norway. Mm-hmm. It's cold island up in north of the Arctic Circle, and grew up in a very small community there. About between 200 and 300 people, and
wow, that is a small community. Well, so you would really know everyone in your city, right, or your town, or whatever it is, right?
You'd think so. I know all the faces, but names, I can't compute. So, very small community, and grew up with a godfather with Down syndrome that's very close to me, and my autistic sister, and just came from there, and then I decided to study disability nursing, so I moved out of there when I was 16, and they don't have unis there, as you can imagine.
And out of curiosity, like, what made you want to come to Australia of all places? Like, Australia is pretty far away from where you originated from. What made you come here?
Yeah, I was actually never a traveler when I was younger. I mean, I never went on a family holiday with my family. My dad was just working all the time. I'm actually pretty sure he's autistic too, but I just started traveling when I was, 23, I think. Mm-hmm. And I came to Australia and I just absolutely loved it here. I was just here for 2 weeks. So, yeah. And then I came back and I couldn't get it out of my head, and I asked my employer if I could come to work in disability for 6 months, and now I'm still here.
Nice. I got to admit, that would be, would you say it would have been like a huge culture shock coming from like a town of like 300 people to like probably one of the largest cities in Australia, the largest city in Australia?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's pretty much as many people in Sydney as there is in all of Norway. So, Wow. Yeah, it's definitely different. Yeah. Crazy. I'm sticking to the beach side too. It feels more like home over here than in the middle of the sky.
Yeah. Cool. Now, you know, really interesting stuff that you're talking about. But, you know, I think the main thing that we really wanted to talk about today was about your company that you started, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, Travelvengers. Have I pronounced it right? Travelvengers. What the hell am I talking about? Sorry. But yeah, you know, so I'm assuming, you know, you've got an autistic sister. What sort of made you say, hey, look, I want to start this business?
Yeah, there was quite a few things that came together. My sister got diagnosed when she was 11. Mm. And, when she was young, she was happy to hang out by herself and do her thing and in school. And then as she grew up, the social differences became more clear to her. No, she tried things and failed.
Like socialization stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Didn't really find a place socially and things like that and started struggling. Eventually I was being selected mute. And then as a disability nurse, and I got really passionate about supporting young people in a similar situation as her at school. So I wrote my bachelor thesis about that. And then I worked with other young people who were struggling with similar things as her, who just wanted to, you know, connect with people, finding it hard to find people in similar situations. Mm-hmm. Failing socially when trying with neurotypicals, and didn't really get the chance in school and employment either. Mm-hmm. And then I came here and, like I said, I just worked in, I was going to work in disability for 6 months. And then I met a young man who I was working with, who was 28, and he just really wanted to travel. He wanted to have mates, but.
And this guy was autistic, I'm assuming, yeah?
He had a hidden disability.
Yeah.
So he was actually, he had a mild intellectual disability. Hmm. So that was a little bit different. But there was another young man that I was working with who was autistic, what used to be Asperger's. They were all struggling with the same things, just couldn't find the right groups. And there was one situation that I think just really, set me off, like, okay, that's enough. We've got to do something. And,
Did you just like trial it with him or with your sister or something first, or did the business idea come to you straight away?
No. Well, one of those young guys, he asked me if we could travel together because mm-hmm. he loved traveling, but he didn't mm-hmm. have any friends. So he was basically paying support workers to be his friends. Mm-hmm. That's not very helpful when what you're looking for is mates. So, yeah, I tried finding like groups we couldn't find, and I looked it up, but I couldn't find anything like no travel groups for poor people like him.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I just like, okay, we're gonna start it. We're gonna go all in, and we're gonna change the world.
Yeah, yeah, cool. You know, and talking about that, you know, you started it, all that type of stuff, and I suppose what was some of the challenges you found when you saw, you know, because I know what starting a business is like, and especially when it's, I suppose it's something in this area, you know, it can be really difficult. What was some of the challenges you sort of faced, you know, because really you would have had to try and, I suppose, educate people on what you're trying to do, why you're trying to do it, the importance of that. Yeah. What were some of the challenges you actually faced straight out?
Well, the first thing was that I had zero experience in like running a business. Obviously, I was never wanting to do it either. So it was a huge learning journey for me personally. I had to get over a lot of hurdles within myself. And yeah, also didn't have a lot of network here because obviously it's just new here. But I think that was the first hurdles, first learning about the landscape here, and getting over myself, and then learning about how the disability space works here. I didn't know anything about NDIS, for example, didn't know it existed or anything like that. So that was a big challenge to figure that out, because it's for anyone, very complex. A bit of a challenge.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so NDIS, you work with NDIS, so they can use their funds for this sort of stuff?
Yeah. I would say about 87% of our travelers have NDIS funding.
Yeah. Right.
Cool. So yeah. So that obviously really helped. That was like when I started, I was like, how is anyone gonna be able to do this like financially and all that? So that's obviously helped the travelers a lot. So that's good.
Because I'm assuming too, with probably a lot of your travelers, there's probably a really high rate of unemployment too. So how they get funding to be able to go travel or go wherever, because I'm assuming that even some of the travel probably isn't, say, overseas. It could be just to Perth or up to Northern Queensland or something like that.
Even going interstate is, it adds up, and especially when – because we have higher support ratio than our usual travel company.
What's the support ratio, sorry?
Oh, sorry. So we have more guides than a usual travel company or like a group, tour group would have. So that obviously increases the cost a bit as well.
Crazy. So how's the business going? You know, you've started it, you've got all this type of stuff. Now, I didn't know this, but Kev, did you say you saw this like on TV?
I saw an ad on Instagram and then looked it up more and found it was 60 Minutes you were on, right?
It was ABC 7:30.
ABC 7:30.
Yeah. And with that, has that sort of that publicity, has that done any, like, has it helped?
Yeah, we got a lot of inquiries after the show, because a lot of people say we're the best kept secret. Not everyone knows about us.
Nice.
That really helped with people finding us around the country. We started in Sydney, and now we're set up in Sydney and Melbourne. So we run local social groups every week in Sydney and Melbourne, and then we also support travellers around Australia to get to the trips. So we've done.
I know I'll be sending my sister your way for sure.
Oh yeah,
little sister who's autistic. Yeah.
Oh nice.
Never traveled. Yeah. So.
So out of curiosity, how does it work? Like, you know, do you send people to travel with these, like, with the your what am I looking for, with your clients type of thing, or how does it normally work?
Yeah, so we have our own support guides, that's what we call them. And then we organize all the logistics and bookings and everything. We set up a pre-trip Zoom call so that everyone can say hi to each other before going, to reduce some of that pre-trip anxiety as well, for some familiarity with both the guides and the other travelers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
crazy.
And then we have some other things in place, obviously, to support our neurodivergent travelers. And then we book and then they go. It's quite complex. Yeah, I'm not going to lie.
Well, the thing is that, you know, I remember one of the first businesses I was looking at when I first started was within the tourism type of field. And not having any experience in that field is incredibly difficult within itself. Would you have found that has been a very difficult thing for you to get your head around? Because from the sounds of it, yeah, you've probably done a little bit of traveling, but what you're doing is completely different when you're organizing things, understanding how flights work, all of that, where you've got a, sounds like a disability background, but now you've sort of gone into a whole different area within itself. Has that been a challenge?
Yeah, I mean, that's been a big learning curve as well. When I decided I wanted to do this, I knew that I had to learn more. So one of the things I did was I worked for a disability travel company for about a year. That was for older adults with physical disabilities and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that gave me a lot of knowledge in how to, how to organize things and understanding the risks and all that, and how to navigate smooth operations and safety and everything. And then I've partnered up with an expert in travel and tourism who's also been exceptional in helping us in that aspect as well.
And I think that's the thing, like, especially in business, when you're partnering with people, you're bringing in those different skills to, I suppose, compensate for the things you may not know type of thing, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Crazy.
Yeah, right? Definitely. And that's how, you know, sometimes you've got to do that, like learn, have different people with different skills on the team, as we know.
Well, that's where diversity is huge. Do you know exactly what I mean? Like, sometimes people bring so many different things that it just makes it so much, I suppose, easier if everyone was all. And I think this is where, you know, when we're thinking about, I suppose, neurodiversity in the workplace, this is where neurodivergent people can bring those completely different skills. Actually, out of curiosity, how many staff do you have?
We're about, I think we're 23 now. Yeah.
Wow. And, crazy. And are some of them neurodivergent?
Yeah, most of our admin team is neurodivergent.
Yeah, actually. Cool.
And all like late discoveries. So I think maybe I've just, because as I mentioned to you, Will, as well, like I discovered my own ADHD about a year ago, and I think maybe I've hired, like, subconsciously, all the neurodivergents as well. But we now also put it in the job ad that we are actively seeking neurodivergent applicants.
It's crazy how, we've talked, the amount of people we talk to on the podcast, all of us, including Will and myself, are all, like, recently diagnosed ADHD, among other things. Like, I'm autistic as well. But, we've talked a lot. Will's mentioned a few times, you know, you sort of the amount of people he's found from school that ended up being neurodivergent that he was just drawn to without even realizing, you know,
Yeah, it's like you can just like, I don't know, I can pick out, probably because I work in this space, is that I can pick out a lot of neurodivergent people just like that these days. And a lot of the time, some of these people wouldn't even know that they're neuro. And I'm not going to go up to them and go, hey, are you this or that? Because some people may get a little bit offended, but not that they should, but you do have to be cautious of that. But, yeah, you've probably found that that's been probably a big thing. You're like, I just feel right with this person. I don't know. That's how I feel sometimes.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I thought, you know, as far as I knew in school, I was just weird. And so, you know, when I found other weird kids, we were all weird together and we felt comfortable doing that. You know,
Exactly. And that's kind of like, a bit of a concept, I guess, with Tremendous as well, like just gathering all those with on similar wavelength and, where. Mm.
That's cool. Hey, just out of curiosity, and this is sort of a different subject, but what is like, is neurodiversity big in the country you come from originally? Is it really spoken about?
There's a movement going on there as well. Mm. I think they're very far behind still. There's definitely, still a lot of undiagnosed folks going around, as there is everywhere. Where I'm from, it's hardly, it's such a small place.
Mm.
But I think it's still a lot of misconception for sure. And,
How do you feel about where it's at in Australia?
Sorry?
How do you feel about where it's at here in Australia?
It's definitely going somewhere. Yeah, I think it's moving pretty fast. Like what I see now from like compared to when I started Tremendous, it was zero. And I don't even think the term neurodivergent was a thing then. Mm.
When did you start? Sorry.
Oh, yeah, maybe I'm wrong. But I started working on it 4.5 years ago.
It was definitely And I think the thing is, like, with probably the terms and all that, because, like, I remember, like, almost 10 years ago with the neurodiversity community, it was so small. Now everyone's talking about it. Do you know what I mean? And that's where it's like, oh, my God, this huge change I've seen. And it's good. It's good in a way, but I've seen a lot change, but I think the fact that people are starting to learn about it may sort of make people go, oh, well, it's only a new thing. And it's like, well, it's actually been spoken about for a while. You're maybe just learning about it now, if that makes sense.
But that's just the conversation working, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've only been here for 6 years. So I guess, maybe I'm late to the party then.
Hey, but you're at the party. That's the main thing, right? Yeah, that's the main thing. Hey, out of curiosity as well, have you had many interests from people with where you originally come from in what you're doing?
Yeah, a little bit. I had someone asking for advice to set up something similar in Norway. Actually had someone applied to Tremendous, who's from Norway, had heard about me in Norway and now wanted to work with us, but not that much. I haven't done much work there, to be honest. Eventually I'd like to, but for the moment, until I can serve them in some way, I don't want to, try to
see
get any hopes up too soon.
And I think as well, probably maybe a challenge that you might face is that maybe the disability system over in Norway is probably a little bit different to, say, the NDIS here in Australia. So that would be a challenge within itself as well.
Yeah, it's very much government run. There's not too much room for innovation there, I think. Obviously, now I've been here for 6 years. But it's very much how it used to be in Australia, from my understanding, where, you would get kind of like a pension and then here you go. Hopefully you can do something with it. or being kind of put into organizations. But yeah.
I think, you know, for all its problems that do need to be fixed, when I tell a lot of people, overseas friends, about the NDS, they're absolutely amazed that we have something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually very progressive, even though it's heaps of old.
Yeah. And I think I haven't actually dealt with the system myself, but I'm assuming it can only get better. I don't know, because, you know, the things I hear with the NDIS is that sometimes it can be extremely – well, Kev, didn't you say it was extremely difficult for your sister to get on the NDIS?
Yeah, I mean, my sister clearly needs support. She's lower functioning and also has an intellectual disability as well as the autism, and it took us 2 years to get her on it. My mom has physical issues and can't quite – work basically or get around like she used to, and she needs ongoing physical therapy, and she got shot down so after a long period of trying to apply for it, and I'm currently in the process, so we're going to see how that goes. I don't know, I think they're going to take one look at me and think that high functioning, get lost, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's like a lottery. It's it depends on who you meet by the it's a bit unfair.
Crazy. So, you know, and I suppose we're talking about some challenges here, but what are some of the challenges that your company helps to address? Now, I think you've sort of spoken about some of them, but what other things, you know, like do people struggle to, I don't know, if their baggage has gone missing, do you help with that? I don't know. What's some of the things that your company helps to address or helps these people with?
Well, yeah, when I started, there was three main things that I wanted to address, and then one of them was this, like, the social isolation part, to create a community where people could come together, people with similar interests, and yeah, getting the opportunity to socialize, to potentially make friends if they wanted to make friends, or even just, be around people of a similar age and not just family members. Not saying all autistic people don't have friends, but a lot of people who come to us do struggle with that. So that was one main thing. And then it was to make travel accessible. A lot of people in our community they've never traveled independently before, just gone on, again, family trips, and wanted to educate the tourism industry as well. So when we go and travel somewhere, we communicate with the tour providers and we say what our travelers need, or we might even just say that we're an autism travel group, and then we come, and then they might get a different view of what autism looks like. And so that's one thing. And then
I imagine if it's
on the way too.
Sorry, I imagine if it's a small group, they'd get many different ideas of what autism looks like and start to understand
the
broadness
of
the spectrum.
Yeah, that it's not just like that one thing they saw on TV or whatever it is. So yeah, and just educating the general community as well, like through things like LinkedIn and getting in front of people who don't meet autistic people every day. So that was the thing. But
Well, you know, and I think this is the thing. Like, I see it a lot. Like, I'm very big on educating people about neurodiversity, and you know, even for me as a neurodivergent person myself, I'm still learning so much about it myself, because it is so diverse within itself. It's like, you know, I could meet an autistic person, well, Kevin's autistic, and he is completely different to so many other autistic people I know. So, you know, educating people on that, and you know, it's almost like with my company, Neurodiversity Academy, we're really trying to educate people that within education. Do you know what I mean? Because we can't, it's not a one size fits all. And maybe, you know, I think the thing is, it's like, oh, you know, I heard one time that someone was like, oh, yeah, if you're a neurodivergent person, a person like that, they just want a job where they can sit in the background and just be left alone. And I'm like, hell no. I don't want to be sat in the background and left alone. I want to be leading teams. I want to be out there. I want to be doing all this stuff. But that wasn't that person's fault. I think it had been maybe their experience with another autistic person who maybe wanted to get a job and be left alone in the background. That's not everyone. So, yeah, I think that's probably the hardest thing for yourself is to sort of say, hey, look, not everyone's the same, and you maybe need to, I suppose, handle things differently in certain situations. Kev?
Yeah, for sure. And we people sign up with us as well. Like we let them tell us like what their preferences are and if there's anything that triggers them and if there's something that we can do to make things more comfortable as well. And that can be an array of different things depending on the people on the trip as well.
Totally, totally, totally. So, you know, a big thing about this podcast today is, you know, really talking about like people's life skills and, you know, really building on them. And how is that travel, how is it that travel can help autistic people develop life skills? Now, I'm going to say this one, right? I know not even just autistic people, but people in general, I think, can learn so much from traveling. I know for me, as a neurodivergent person growing up, I was undiagnosed ADHD, I was dyslexic. Leaving school, I had no confidence. I had no confidence to go pay bills. I was really bad with my money. My parents would help me get jobs. I really couldn't stand on my own two feet. But then I got to a point where I was like, nah, that's it. I'm going to go travel the world. My parents probably thought that, man, he's crazy. He can't even pay his own bills and all this type of stuff. But, you know, for me, when I got out there and started to, you know, experience the world and experience people and people know what people thought about me, that was where I really started to develop a lot of skills. To tell you the truth, I probably would not be doing a lot of the work I'm doing now without my traveling experience, you know. So how is that travel helps develop these life skills for autistic people, I should say?
that's a great share, and that's the thing as well. Like it's not just for autistic people, it's for anyone. Like I've learned heaps of myself traveling as well, just from learning about myself and learning about other people, learning about problem solving, and being in new environments, getting difficult situations, again, problem solving. But and for autistic people, I guess one of the biggest differences is that they might not have had that chance before. Like there's a lot of travel companies out there, but they might not be suitable to the interests or to the way of traveling, especially for young people.
Like a Kentucky tour might be a little bit too confronting for some people, or overwhelming maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And not everyone's into, you know, partying and all that stuff either. But yeah, we've seen a lot of people who start with us and come in very low confidence or very shy, might have been struggling in previous social situations, and then coming to us and feeling like they can be themselves or that they do belong. And then being able to go out there, spend time without family, being in new environments, and again, problem solve with other people, chatting to people, finally gets them and building that confidence. And then, we've also, obviously it's different. it's different going in Australia to overseas. Like, you go overseas, and obviously it's different cultures. But, yeah, even being in our groups, because you have a lot of different personalities and needs, so you've also got to, you know, like, accept each other and communicate with each other. So, yeah, those, yeah, and getting around and things like that, and, yeah.
And I think the thing as well, the biggest thing I found when I was traveling was, you know, how, like, I don't know about you, but I got lost so many times when I was traveling. Because back when I was this is going back 15 years ago or longer, you know, there was no, like, iPhones where you could sort of find where you were and then get back. You'd have to, like, ask people, hey, sorry, where am I here? Or I remember one time I got lost in France, in Paris, and in the buildings in Paris all looked the same. And I'm thinking, I felt like I was going around in circles, and I was really freaking out. I was about to go to the police station. But then I sort of, like, had to go into a hotel and talk to them, and they hardly spoke English, and I was able to use their internet, and, you know, that problem-solving type of thing really came into place, which I think has really helped me. But out of curiosity, before, say, a lot of your clients, I don't know, are about to embark on a trip or something, do you guys, like, provide training or anything like that beforehand?
To the guides or to the travelers?
Oh, to the travelers, maybe. Maybe might be like, hey, look, we've got this situation here. What might you do in this situation? I don't know. I'm just thinking off the top of my head.
We haven't yet. That's a good idea. We are working.
Oh, there you
on...
go. You can make some money off that, hey? Business idea.
Will be
no,
and
we're
will.
We're working on that. We've actually run it. We've run something... like a travel training program once. So we're gonna do that again in the future. So yeah, learning about all the different things about traveling, because traveling is complex. Like, it's overwhelming for anyone, I think. Well, maybe just me, but there's so many things related to travel that it's
Well, I've turned up to airports like a day in advance. Do you know what I mean? Like, and then had to go back to the place that I just checked out of, check back in, you know, things like that. And that is such a neurodivergent person thing to do. Do you know what I mean?
Losing your whole luggage maybe at home.
yeah, stuff like that, you know. But you know what, right? It's listening to you speak about these skills that these people potentially would be gaining, you know, that probably is really good for, say, after their trip when we're thinking about jobs and all of that type of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. It translates. You know, like, same as you, like you said, you might not have had the confidence to start a business if you haven't gone traveling, and that shows off in several ways. And we have, you know, people who have struggled to have to get jobs who's now working, and even the mental health aspect, that's a huge thing for us. It's not just travel, you know.
There's very few feelings like when the plane takes off, and just, you know, your problems will be there when you get back, but for the moment nothing matters, and
but can I say, right, like, probably the thing I love about traveling the most, yeah, okay, you go to the sites. Let's say you're in Paris and you see the Eiffel Tower or something. That's cool, right? But the best thing I love is the people, meeting people. Mm-hmm. That's what I love the most. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know, when you're traveling, it just seems that, like, it's so much easier to meet people when you're traveling than if I was to go down to Manly and go to the local pub and start speaking to people, they'd probably tell me to piss off. You know what I mean? It's just such a different experience, you know. And I know for my mental health, when I came back from overseas, my mental health really went down because I just have not been able to get back to that that thing of being able to socialize with people as often and meet as many people. That just doesn't happen here in Australia.
Yeah.
I can safely say it's one part of ADHD I don't get. Personally.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting too because some might want to go and travel and, you know, just be alone go and hide somewhere. And some might go because they want to explore, and some might want to go because they want to socialize. Like, there's different goals of traveling. But yeah, we have so many travelers who just they have things on their bucket list, like things they want to do as well, and then just wanting to have someone to experience that with as well. So that's also something.
So in saying that, have you ever had any can you tell us about any success stories that you've helped happen? I don't know, maybe someone found the love of their life, or I don't know. Anything can happen. How many times do you hear like stories about someone meeting their partner or something? And I don't know, interesting stuff. Have you got any interesting stories or success stories?
Yeah, oh, we have many great ones. So, well, we have one where, two people met at a social group. They had met online before, but they had never met in person. And then they met in person at a tremendous social event. And then, now they've traveled together. They're still together a year and a half, 2 years later. Went on a tremendous couples trip to Perth. It was good.
Sorry, so do you have events as well, do you?
Yeah. We run,
And so, sorry to butt in, but how often do they run? How can people get on them? I think that would be a really interesting thing for maybe some of our listeners who are they held in Sydney or where are they held?
Yeah, Sydney and Melbourne, yeah.
Oh, cool.
And then we run about 2 to 3 events a week or on the weekends in each city. And
that's interesting.
Yeah, and then we run a virtual travel group for those who can't access or can come in person, so we do that every week Wednesday night. So my sister actually used to join that from Norway, and
does your sister your sister been to Australia?
Not yet.
is that the plan?
I'll get over one day. She knows some of the faces too, so
this would be, I don't know about you, but I know for me when now especially, I know a lot of people all over the world thanks to social media, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever you want to call it, right? Mm-hmm. And the coolest thing about, especially when you go to a country and you know people there, I don't know about you, but that's when traveling is cool for me, because I just feel like the locals take you to places you would never be able to experience when you're just traveling on your own.
Yeah, that happened in Vienna with me because I had friends there. And they showed me all the cool little bars and cool little cafes. And sadly, no live music in Vienna. That was a bummer.
Ooh, disappointing.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, that'll be a good one moving forward.
Nice. So, how have the partners and providers you're working with supported what you're doing? Now, what we mean by that is the airlines that maybe you're booking through, maybe the hotels you're dealing with, the travel agent, I don't know. But how have, you were talking about training before. Have some of them opted to maybe get some training to better understand autism? We're starting to see the sunflower lanyard being used a lot spoken about a lot. Is this being very recognized across a lot of the travel industry now?
It's getting there. it's very varied, the responses that we get, I would say. Most of the time people are, you know, just, yeah, accepting of it. And then you have some who are, yeah, just like, no, we can't do that. And that's obviously very, you know.
And sorry, out of curiosity, is it they say they can't do that because they don't want to, or it's just that's not part of what they do, or?
Oh, like I said, most of the time it's no problem.
Yeah.
But we've had, yeah, there was one, we tried to book an accommodation once and he said the place wasn't fitted out for autistic people or something like that.
What does that even mean?
Yeah, no, that's exactly true. What like, does that what mean? Oh my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Do they not have enough headphones? What's the deal?
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. But you know what? I think that could even, do you think that could even come down to a lack of understanding?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and this is what I think the big problem is, because I always share this. I reached out to a dance company one time in Sydney here, and I wanted to try and interview some neurodivergent people within the arts there. I think it might have been for one of my other podcasts. And they're like, oh, no, sorry, we don't have those types of people working for us. I'm like, get real, man. You've probably got bucket load. I would be surprised if you're neurodivergent, you know. But, like, it was just that lack of understanding, I think, that people just don't understand it.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a huge supporter of the Sunflower Lanyard. It's really helping our travelers, especially when they travel independently to meet our group. And the support that the airlines show. But that's obviously quite new. Like, that's just coming more and more now. And, yeah, so we're part of that scheme. And, yeah.
Do you know what? I was at the NRL grand final on the weekend, just past the weekend before. And I was actually sitting there and I looked over and there was a gentleman wearing the sunflower lanyard, and I said to my mate, I said, oh, do you know what that means there? He's like, no. I said, oh, that person's probably autistic, and you know, it shows, hey, this and that and blah 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 blah. But you know, and I think this is the thing, it's still, unless you really work in that space or have a bit of training or understanding around it, no one would really know what that is yet.
Yeah. So I think, sorry, you go. No, I just I think the more, or the big corporates as well, start learning about it when they get involved, then hopefully that'll, you know, roll on to the staff and the people.
Well,
is there anyone
and whatnot, but,
is there anyone in particular you would shout out that you found to be really great to work with? Are we not there yet?
No, talking about putting her on the spot.
Yeah.
No, it's I would say Sydney Airport is a lot of the airports is doing great things at the moment. There's I don't know if you've traveled recently, but there's priority
lane. Okay, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
For example, so that's a really great thing, especially for families with younger, with children, not everyone who's autistic would need a priority lane, perhaps, but it might help a lot of people. So, yeah, I think those initiatives are really good, and it also kind of shows, you know, it sends a signal that you're welcome as well. That's
Can I say I'm also starting to recognize, and I've more seen it overseas than, say, here in Australia, but the Sunflower Lanyard shops, like shops are starting to actually adopt it as well, you know, and we're starting to see, like, quiet times. Okay, this time we're going to have quiet time at this one, or whatever like that. You know, another thing I saw not long ago was some shops are starting to say have different colored baskets. So, you know, So if you like pick up, I don't know, the white basket, that means that I can't remember off the top of my head. That means that you are open to someone approaching you and asking you if you want help. A black basket means, look, I'm just browsing, please leave me alone type of thing. I thought that's me. I'm the exact same. I really hate when people come up and want to sell me something or something. It's sort of like, oh man, just leave me alone. I just need to shop and get the hell out of here. You know? Stuff like that. But it's just funny how it works. Yeah, totally. Now, I think we sort of spoke about this a little bit. Did you have to educate? So what we're talking about now is, you know, we talked about the partners and all that, but did you have to educate them much, or were they already quite neuro-inclusive? So, you know, you were saying Sydney Airport, you know, did they sort of know about it much, or have you sort of gone, hey, look, we do this. This is what you need to sort of do to be able to help support us.
We've done a bit of that. We had one experience, for example, down at I don't know. Should I name?
Entirely up to you.
We went to a museum, for example, where it was extremely loud. It was so uncomfortable for our travelers and. I was there too, and it was just, so loud. It was an installation or something. And we spoke to the administration afterwards, and we could send an email as well to explain how awful that was. And they were onto it. They or at least the person we spoke to was actually a neurodivergent himself, and he said, like, I know we need to do something kind of thing. But definitely not everyone knows. We just had a really good experience booking with the Opera House as well. Like we're doing a social event there. Doing an open day, and they were going to have a low sensory group. So apparently the other groups are like 1,000 people, but this group was just going to be like 40 people. And obviously a lot less going on. So that was really positive.
I've noticed actually the museums like here in Sydney I think they open early or something to it might be more for autistic kids or something like that. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I've seen something like it's like a sense and you can actually go in and touch things and stuff like that, but I think it's more designed for like autistic children rather than say if Kevin wanted to go in there or something, I don't know, or me or whoever.
I think it's accessible to everyone, but it's getting somewhere, but it's still quite a few
just like anything. I think it's like anything. I think it's just like if we the more we talk about it, the more we see it, the more people start to become more aware of it. You know, the lanyard thing is a great thing because, you know, I think as well having signs saying what they like, there was a shop that had the sign of the sunflower lanyard thing. That's good because people might see that and start seeing it more often and go, oh, that means that, you know. So when it's advertised more and we start hearing more about it, more people start to learn about that. So the more it sort of gets to, I don't know, understood type of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. We're getting somewhere.
Yeah,
but
totally.
Actually, there's a lot of I've noticed a lot in the disability space as well in NDIS and everything. There's still a lot of people that are not like they don't know what neurodivergency is. So there's still long way to go there, I think.
And I think it's like with anything in especially in D&I, There's still so much more to do, but I think, you know, we are a lot closer than what we were 10 years ago, 5 years ago, which is a positive. And I think maybe the work that you're doing is really, you know, really starting to open people's minds to, oh, gee, I never really realized that people do struggle with this type of thing. Like, you know, this is what I say to my wife sometimes, is that certain places I just can't go when it's like very busy. I need to, like, I remember going to the opera, like not the opera house, but Circular Quay there. And I thought it would be really quiet. And it, for some reason, it was packed. And my mind was just going into like just sensory overload type of thing. And I was just getting so angry and frustrated, not at my wife. And I was just like, I've just got to get out of here. I just got to get out of here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when, and I think as well, once people can understand that as well, because I used to go to music festivals and stuff like that back in the day and wonder why I was so full of anxiety when I was going there, you know, because I can't deal with that type of stuff. But once we sort of become more aware of it, it's better. Yeah, sorry, Fredon, John.
I would when I'm like playing shows or watching another band, I'm always in the audience because the music just drowns out everything else. And that's sort of how I get through those sorts of situations. But I was going to say, it's kind of like there's having this conversation and then there's getting that conversation to happen in new places. And I think I feel like that's what Trevengers is doing. But I did want to ask, where does that name come from?
Yeah.
Oh.
anything to do with the Avengers or like, what's
I don't know, does it?
Trevengers.
Yeah, it was kind of like I wanted something unique, but it's also like a bit of a, you know, when people are not necessarily being recognized or being the outcasts and then coming together and they're being stronger together.
That's cool. I like that. That's cool.
That is heaps cool.
I like that. Agnes, honestly, thank you so much for like coming on the podcast today. It's been really cool chatting with you about this. You know, and I suppose looking at it from a little bit of a different perspective, you know, traveling for me definitely was hard at some times. I think I really pushed myself sometimes and my anxiety was through the roof, but I definitely learned so much from it. So I think all the work you're doing is really helping so many people. So thank you so much for all your work.
Thank you for having
me. Not a problem. This is what it's really all about. Yeah, totally.
We just want to have a conversation with people and just talk about it openly. I think that's what's a little bit different about the way we're doing this, is it's not so much of an interview, so to speak.
Yeah.
I hate conversation.
Totally.
Like, every time if I need to pitch something, I'm just like trying to remember every single word and I just like,
It's like, can you it's like, can you give me, what is it? Like, I hate when people go, can you give me an elevator pitch? And I'm like, man, you're asking an ADHD person to give you an elevator pitch, man. Like, make it sound simple. Because, like, my brain's got a million and one things going on. But it's crazy. But
15 minutes later.
Yeah, totally. I think people are like, geez, man, I really put my foot in it then. Out of curiosity, if people want to connect with you or find out all the great stuff or want to go on a tour somewhere, where's the best place to find you?
I guess our website is great, trevengers.com.au, and our Instagram, Trevengers. Or if you want to reach me, you can reach me on agnesabelson.com as well. Super awkward.
And I'm assuming LinkedIn.
LinkedIn,
as well,
Yeah.
cool. Awesome. Fredon, John, did you have anything else you wanted to say before we close off?
No, not really. It's a great chat.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on today. It's been really cool. And, you know, anyone else who's been listening, and if you want to, you know, really resonated with this, please connect with these guys. They're doing awesome. Also, if you haven't already done so, please subscribe, like, and follow all of our social media pages, or visit our website, openheartedsociety.com. My name's Will Wheeler. Join with my main man, Photon John. Thank you so much for listening. This is the Open Hearted Podcast. Till next time.